whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Hi everyone, this is David Löbe for German rock radio station Rock Antenna, and I'm very happy and a little honored to be talking to the mastermind behind one of the most exciting rock and metal bands of this millennium, Tobias Forje of Ghost. I appreciate that you took the time out of your day.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. How are you doing?
I'm a little under the weather, but I'm good. How are you?
Good. I have been under the weather, it's pollen season, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Samesies.
It's fine. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, I imagine you're doing still a lot of rehearsals for the shows?
We're just now starting. We had a little, we started off a little before Christmas, actually, and got a few weeks of rehearsing back then. So now we're just getting back into gear, but sort of, leaning a little on the fact that we have spent some time together with the new songs and all that. So, but now, of course, we're at the ramp up to the tour.
Yeah. On April 25th, your new album hits shelves, Skeletor. And I had the great privilege of hearing it already. And I don't know if you give a fuck what some random radio reporter from Germany thinks, but I loved it.
I care.
Are you still excited or even nervous before big releases like this, or is it just routine by now, being the sixth full-length album?
I don't think it ever becomes a routine, because you're years ago I heard this very it wasn't even like a rumor, because it happened with a big artist and a fairly known journalist here in Sweden, but it was in the modern days, maybe 10 years ago. And this journalist was interviewing Keith Richards, and he said something negative about the new record. And the story goes that Keith Richards sort of pulled a knife on him or wanted to beat him up. And I'm just like, okay, so that's atrocious. But it's also like, good on you, man. It's like, you care. Because I don't think you'd ever stop caring. I guess you can be sort of a little bit more distantly blasé about what some people think about the record. If you're an established artist and you're doing well, you will always have, especially in this day and age, obviously, when everybody has a voice, there will always be a certain degree of, certain handful of people who are very vocal about how much they hate your band and how much they hate you. And how much does record suck? They are disregarding the fact that you're wasting your time saying that means that we mean more to you than the other way around. Mm. But I don't think that when you put a lot of time and effort into a record, especially when you're writing the record, maybe it's a different thing if you're sort of just the band member who doesn't write anything and you're just there for the paycheck. It might be a little bit of what you're talking about. You're distant enough to not really care about, it's just a job. But when you're writing a record and you're creatively, putting yourself out there, of course you care. The routine, though, lends a little bit more of a guidance as mm-hmm. to how you deal with the feelings around a record. You know that, around about here during the recording, I will start feeling, why do I feel like I hate the record? Well, that's because you're 5 months into writing and recording. Oh, okay. And why do I hate the record after mastering? Because you've heard it a million times.
Yeah.
And why do you feel worried just before the record comes out? Because what if it's not good? What if I'm wrong? And everybody else knows that this is a really shit record. I'm just about to find out, right?
Yeah.
And of course, you have those feelings. It's like sending off a letter, old school, or even an email. When you press send, it takes a little while before you get that, answer. And that is always a two double-edged sword. But do you get better at it? A little.
I can imagine that maybe this album even more so than like the previous two, who were more like concept albums, like more societal, bigger picture topics. And as you stated, Skeletor is more introspective and more personal. Is there a specific reason for that? Or did it just come organically when writing it?
It was organic, but it was also a mindset that I took with me into making the record, because Impera was what it was, or is what it is. I had no need to make a second record like that. High horse position here. I didn't feel like the world needed a record like that. Everybody knows that the world is in shambles right as of right now, and that the world feels very insecure. I don't have to tell people that that is the issue. Or shine a light on all these issues. Most people, especially everybody that listens to Ghost, know all these things already. Besides, I've already sort of gone through those things on Impera and other records. I mean, all of our records have political societal commentary. Big misconception about Ghost is that, oh, it's only about Satan. No, it's almost nothing is about Satan. All is about man. All is about man and will to destroy and conquer, and it's all about society. It's all about that, and politics is a part of society. But what I did feel after Impera and knowing where the head was heading was that I want to make a record about something that we will need now, and that we will need going into the future, because the future is gonna change. And it's going to change sooner than we think. What right now feels like this apocalyptic, ending in a way, that it's not ending. It's 2 70-plus-year-olds that have tricked us into believing that the world is ending just because their lives are ending. And that is simply not true. It's simply not true. So as soon as they are out of the picture, we will have to face that the world still exists and that we can still change it for the better. But in order for us to do that, we need to heal ourselves. We need to come to terms with a lot of things that have been stirred up the last decade. And that process is something that I think we need to start doing now. There's going to be a lot of people who feel tricked into investing their lives into movements that are going to crumble. And it's our job, our duty as fellow humans to be open to embracing them again, even though they fucked up, right? Because fucking up is human, unfortunately. But fortunately, we have a superpower, and that is to change things. And I believe in that change. And I believe that the power that I wanted to invest in this record was telling people that there is change and it's coming. And so it's actually a very positive record, if you will. It's there to instill hope and forward looking to progress, because we will need it, because sooner or later it will be here. And then we can't sit and talk about the apocalypse that never happened.
Yeah. So I agree. Not only lyrically, but musically, it wasn't, when I listened to it from front to back, it wasn't an album that was gloomy or dark or negative in any way, but very, very powerful, very straightforward. So you didn't only incorporate it like in the lyrics, but in the music as well, I felt. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course. It's an overall feeling that is streamed through words and tones. Yes.
Overall, again, like in comparison to Emperor, I feel like the album is less, I don't know how to say it, concise musically, which is neither a good or a bad thing. I mean, both records are distinctly Ghost, but Emperor, most songs clearly like sonically live in the same realm, whereas on Skeletor, there's a little more diversiveness going on.
Yes, that was a deliberate choice because I wanted to make a record that didn't have any instrumental tracks on it. A little bit like an exercise because I've had instrumental tracks on every other album. And I wanted to take on the challenge of making 10 songs that were songs with vocals. Like normal lyric songs, but I didn't want to change. So if you're looking at our repertoire, you could say that Squarehammer is like our most punkish sort of Ramonesy verse chorus little thing chorus like a very easy bubblegum pop song, whereas Helvetes Fönster or Miasma or Genesis is like prog hell with a lot of different weird things in it. So I didn't want to have a record that had like four square hammers and then a bunch of miasmas. I wanted to make a record that where the instrumentalist vibes was incorporated into quite catchy songs. And how do I balance so that the overall ingredients list of the record still has all the elements? If you want to be cynical, like drum thing, check. Big solo, check. Instrumental part, check. Weird proggy tricky thing, check. So that it didn't feel like a an easy way out, or take Umbra for example, that had that has elements in it that I know that like a natural way for a radio plugger maybe, and or maybe someone at a label would be like, can you just cut out this weird bit in the song? No, it's there for a reason. It's there because the song is about fucking. So it needs to be there because it's a chase. It's conceptual. And I'm not going to let the hit factor of the song this time dictate if we're going to have this more hardest, the harder part of the song, because it's important for the totality of the song and for the totality of the record. And that was like a little bit of a conceptual thing that I had to make a little bit of an effort to make sure, because in the past, sometimes I have sort of solved it by, okay, let's take all these like complicated bits that didn't fit anywhere and put it into like this instrumental part or this instrumental song. And then you sort of just keep the bubble gum to certain songs, whereas here I wanted to mix it up a little.
I feel like De Profundis Borealis perfectly also matches what you just said, because it's like a it has the like more typical Ghost big hook chorus and like big rock hymn feel, but at the same time it's very proggy. I tried counting along with it and I kind of failed. I'm not a great musician, but still. So that also fits that bill, which is very interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
Talking about Umbra, and I think the same applies to songs like Peacefield and Missilia Amori, that there is a very heavy 80s rock vibe in a lot of these songs, like almost like Scorpions, Bon Jovi-esque 80s power rock, especially like in Missilia Amori. The 80s vibe at some point in your career reared its head, but I feel like on this record more so than on the previous ones. How did that come to be? Was it like the music that you were listening to at the time while writing these songs inspired you?
Not really. If there was specific records that had a an influence, that is not to say that I'm not inspired in general. about from inspired by a big 80s anthemic arena rock. I am. But it was not like I bought it like an old Slippery When Wet, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, I'm gonna write a record like that. And the same thing with Impera. Like, just because I mentioned Def Leppard back then, it wasn't like I just heard Hysteria and I was like, oh, well, fuck, I'm gonna make a record like that. I listen to a lot of music all the time, and it's everything from Beherit to Bee Gees. Like, it's really, I listen to so many different things. But if there was like a specific vibe that meant something to me, I wouldn't say that fans will hear it. But there were two records made same year I was born, 1981, that by two different bands that were basically the same age. They were at the same point in their career, and I think they were both bands that had been active since the 60s, or early 70s. They professionally in, during the 70s, and here in 1981 they were both, I think, looking at the 80s with a little bit of fright. Punk was all over the place. New wave was all over new pace. 1981, the 80s hadn't really started. It was still sort of the 70s. And if you were like a 30 someone in a band at that point, and you had made seven records, you're old. You're an old guy. And these both bands, I think, were sort of standing with their compasses, trying to navigate what to do, because both of them were also on the verge of being kicked out by their labels, because they were not doing very well. So they made records that was sort of similar, and they both had like a futuristic rock sound where they experimented with synths, and you can hear that on the recordings because they're like, oh, here's a, like a new synth that we're incorporating. And those two records was Bomb and Og by Uriah Heep and Fire of Unknown Origin by Blue Oyster Cult. And those two records were something that I had with me into making these, saying, I want to have a record that kind of, I'm basically pretending to be in 1981, trying to do something that sounds futuristic. But I'm not sure at all if anybody listening now who will go on Spotify and listening to these records, Abominog by Uriah Heep, Fire of Unknown Origin by Blue Oyster Cult, if you will hear what I'm talking about. But for me, that was an inspiring thing.
I mean, we will try to do
Yeah, you can
it.
try to do it. See if you
I'm
see what I'm saying.
gonna do it after the
But
interview, though, because
yeah, but they're two great records.
Okay.
They're cool. They're very cool.
Interesting. Yeah, but by no means was I like inferring that that there is like an 80s vibe through all of the album, just a few songs. On the other hand, I mean, you got like got songs like Satanized, Lacrima and Cenotaph, kind of more go back into especially the guitar sound was something that jumped out to me, like from the first time I heard Satanized. It's like distinctly more gritty than it was on Impera and Prickell. Like more old school ghost, less modern metal, thick, more like this classical metal with more mids and highs. Did that sound just fit the songs, or was it a conscious decision to approach the guitar sound in that way?
Oh, it was absolutely conscious. And this is it, where you already said that I was sort of straying away from the 80s a little. And I'm very 70s influenced, and we're Satanized. From the day when I wrote that, I've always sort of referred to that song as like a 70s Scorpions song. It sounds like something that they would have written in around In Trance or Taken by Force, that sort of era of Scorpions be before they came this big ballady 80s band. Even Accept sounded a little bit like that on the first record when they were were that when they were sort of closer to Scorpions in a way in the 70s. That is a very old school song for me. That's like a traditional. That would be almost like what old blues was to the Rolling Stones. It's almost like a 12 bar, you know. Here's my sort of roots of 70s hard rock. That sort of and another, you were talking about guitars. Another band that has meant a lot to me over the years is Boston, and the guitar sound is actually Tom Scholz, Rockman. That's his signature little. If you're a guitar player and you've ever been to a guitar store, you might have seen a little Rockman. That's like this little blue box that looks like a radio, or like, and it says Rockman, and it has that sort of like nasally, chorusy sound. And I wanted to make the whole records with that, and I saved up and basically padded it with another wall of Marshalls as well, so that you have a little bit of grit. But the main nasally aspect of that is not only my voice, but it's also the guitars, because that has that sound.
In my opinion, Tom Scholz, like one of the most underappreciated masterminds of rock ever. So I'm glad to hear it.
Oh yeah, I'm a huge influence. I love Boston. I think he's a, I mean, obviously he is a genius. Like literally,
Absolutely.
I mean, he what is it, like a technical engineer and you know, with a degree, he's like a professor guy. But on the side, he had this little rock project called Boston. Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. And talking about the production and the mix on his record, I feel like also, especially which jumped out to me in Satan Eyes, but also a few other songs, is that the mix is a lot more like, again, old school 70s open and spacious. Like the instruments themselves get more room to breathe in the overall mix as compared to Percale and Impero, where it felt like the mix was more dense.
And that was also a conscious decision. I wanted the soundscape, the audio landscape, to be thinner than your average new metal. Like I'm not saying NU metal, but like a new metal record. What it has been for the last 20 years is it's almost so thick and dense that it almost creates negative space, because it's like it almost becomes phased out. And one way to do that for me, even though I've been also guilty of making records that was slightly more dense and was layered with more keyboards and layered with more guitars, was to really sort of pour contrast fluid into the recording. And I was really going at it this time, and just like, I want to hear the bass really loud. I want to have the drums super clear, and I want the guitars to be heavy and very busy and playing all the time, but very audible. So it's most of the time, it's kind of like one. Not one channel, but one track. You're only hearing the guitar playing like one thing, even though it's technically, I guess, four guitars. But they're playing. I work a lot with dubbing, so I dub a lot of things. And that way, instead of on the first two records, I think I was doing it a little bit more like Rolling Stones, Guns N' Roses. That sort of like guitar left is doing one thing, guitar right is doing another, which is cool. But if you all also have a lot of vocals and keyboards happening, it becomes a little bit crowded. And I've really worked myself away from that over the years, because I want it to be very focused, still, but with the hi-fi, broad, sonic landscape where it feels like big and echoey. So I'm not talking like a Red Hot Chili Peppers, everything in the middle and because that's also an effective way, but you know, We still have keyboards, we still have other things in there, but there's no real percussion on this record as well. There wasn't much, or if any, on Impera, whereas on the previous records it was shakers and tambourines and shit all over the place, and I like that stuff, of course, but if what I've really learned over the years is, like, if you can't hear it, really, if you can't hear what we're doing, just mute it.
Yeah.
If you want to put a shaker in there, make it sound like a fucking shaker so you hear it. The more shit you put on, the less it sounds. It's as simple as that. And I'm still in the process of learning, but I felt that this record was definitely another step forward in the sense of becoming clearer, and also a little bit more purposely made it, vinyl friendly, like clear, separated,
Absolutely. I think you succeeded greatly. And you got, when it comes to percussion, you got the cowbell, which I appreciate very much, and an
Right,
umbra.
right. Okay, so that's a percussion, but
Yeah,
that's a
but
feature. That's a feature. Makes it sound
absolutely.
like, if you're going to use it, fucking jam that
Absolutely.
motherfucker.
A plop rider. Could talk for ages, but then we're going to have to close it up here. Tobias, I appreciate it very much. And I'm super excited for people to hear this record. I enjoyed it very, very much. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in Munich on the 24th, one day before the album
All
release.
right. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to see you there too.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tschüss.
Whole lot of talk, the interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rockin' podcasts.